one of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this old world's gonna reel and rock. Saints, they all tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Actually, I'm gonna be quick like Nestle and beat it like Michael Jackson. That's why your neighbor said I remind him of Nicolas Cage, because I'm gone in 60 seconds. But watch this right here, Dad. Look, who does this the most on a window? The kids, the dogs that are ugly black guys that eat fried chicken. Now, you see these water spots? Look, they get wider than my elbows without lotion. Watch this, Dad, and I'm out your hair. Because Stevie Wonder said seeing is believing. And I got a disease called enthusiasm, so I'm gonna cut straight to the mustard. Watch this, though. Don't laugh too hard, because the neighbor's gonna see this black kid scrubbing your window, okay? But look, wax on, wax off like Mr. Miyagi. Remember the Karate Kid? Now, watch this, it air dry. Look, it puts a coating on your window. No water spots, no fingerprints, no streaks. That's why we can't sell it to criminals. Don't tell OJ or Tiger Woods, okay? High five. They've been loving this stuff. Now, Dad, y'all, you and Mom, y'all would agree. Oh, my God. You see this right here? Who did that? Who did that? Okay, watch this. Now, my mom said if it's darker than me and it don't pay the bills, it shouldn't be there, right? God bless you.
That we're dating off the muggle them. The most of that we have the girl them body and knuckle them. I'm a do them. The novel them. As in the club and we have pop up all the back. Remember say them can't run in, can we defend and we tackle them. And the water come out and we not.
Now look, this right here, we just upgraded like Beyonce. This is our new surfactant. Hold this and watch this, because this should be the main reason why you get the HBO special. You know what HBO mean?
No.
You get to help a brother out. Dad, I've been on the road like toilet paper. Half of your neighbors in the community, they said they just go get it because I'm funny, because this stuff sells itself. Look, you just go back and forth like an argument. Now, I ain't Jesus, but look how I split that like Moses did the Red Sea. Paint me green, call me a pickle. And look at this right here, look. Goes good with chicken. Don't drink it, though, it'll give you the Hershey squirts. But look, that one bottle lasts longer than my last relationship. Y'all got water, right?
Yeah.
How far you qualify to use it? Oh, yeah, Mom. Now, this is my last demo, and I'm out your hair quicker than your favorite shampoo. Y'all familiar with these right here, Sharpies?
Yeah.
Now, watch this. Even though I'm black, it ain't black magic. It just worked. Because, look, say you got this in the clothes or the carpets or the laundry. Would you agree that's hard to get out?
Probably.
Would you throw it out, shout it out, get OJ to stab it out, Mike Tyson to bite it out, Kobe Bryant to...
You were done.
It was a multiple choice funny joke. Because you know you can't put bleach on colors, right?
Sure.
Look at this. This safe on colors. That's why we couldn't sell it to Sammy Sosa. But look, you just spray the spray, right? Now, this right here takes out ink, blood, coffee stains, grass stains, Kool-Aid, lipstick, gum, glue, candle wax. Would you say that's whiter than a Colgate smile? My goodness. You see that?
Can you use it on my teeth?
It ain't Jesus in a bottle. I use mine, they turn brown. No, I'm just kidding. But no, you just use it on for your house. What's the hardest thing to clean? Would it be carpet, the tile, barbecue grills, the shower doors, that oil and rust in the driveway that's blacker than my mother but not as beautiful, or that calcium right there?
Can I put this on YouTube?
Yes, ma'am.
Selling.
Personality.
Sure.
But this sells itself, though. It's called Advantage, the Wonder Cleaner. Best thing since cake and ice cream. Now, unlike Madonna, it's never been touched. So you only put two caps in a bottle. I just come. Most of your neighbors, they just get it because they like me. Y'all familiar with Tony Robbins?
Yeah.
See, I'm taking this course because this is how Jamie Foxx started off door-to-door. And he said 2 years of door-to-door selling is equivalent to 4 years of college communication, how you interact with different people. That's why half of the neighbors don't buy it, because the work, they just get it because they like my tenacity, because they said it in an easy task going door-to-door. I'm pretty sure Windex and bleach ain't never knocked on y'all door, made you laugh when Mom went and got the camcorder just to tape them, right? High five. That's all I'm saying. But what y'all do for a living? Y'all must be in sales too, huh?
Kinda.
I know, because your house bigger than my whole neighborhood. And Zig Ziglar said, every great salesperson buy from a good one, right? God bless you. But that's what I said. Just try the one. You only got to buy the case today like Matt White. My mom said you can't get the whole chicken, at least get the wing, right? And oatmeal beat no meal. But like I said, you only put 2 caps, 20 ounces of water. So that one bottle make you 68 sprayers. But you should just save my autograph, because by the time you run out, you probably see me on Last Comic Standing. And then you go to eBay and get your money back. Because even Jesus said, if you give a person a fish, you can feed them for a day. But if you teach them how to fish, you can feed them for a lifetime, right?
Sure.
God bless you. But if y'all had it, what would you try it on first? Did that right there? Or the hard water spots? Or just because I'm funny?
What?
But you know all of these cleaners right here y'all use?
Uh-huh.
They said this stuff is like a pregnant lady on welfare. It don't work.
Okay.
You get it? Because you know there's Clorox, Simple Green, 409, Comet, Spick and Span, Pine Sol. Y'all probably use a lot of those, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had a choice of grabbing a solid dollar or 100 pennies, what's easy?
Dollar.
High five, Dad. So you sharper than Gillette. That's what I'm talking about. Now, this should be really the check test for y'all, though. Now, Mom, you see y'all door handle? That brass? Oh my God, pull a door. Watch this. This should be the main reason why y'all get the Get Rid of Me special.
Can you sell it for $30?
I'll get fired right now. But what you can do, Mom, you can write this off for fundraising, though. That's what most of your neighbors can do.
What?
You get the
was
right.
Was that a yes?
I like you, Mom. You must be a teacher.
No.
Because you got a lot of class. But you see right here, though, for real? No, you get to write it off, though. That's why a lot of your neighbors don't do it from their pocket. They do it from their heart. But I tell you what I can do. If y'all get the one bottle, I'm going to throw in a free Mary Kay Christian Dior Calvin Klein Louis Vuitton spray bottle to go with it. But this should be the check test, though. You see this brass right here? Now, I'm going to be honest. When the last time y'all seen this look shiny like a baby hiney? When y'all first bought the house? God bless you. Watch this right here. Now,
it's so old.
I know. Now it's about to be brand new. It's going to be two. It's gonna go from 79 to 2010. Look at that. Oh, my goodness. That's worth the bottle right there.
You wiped it off the door, Dad.
Oh, yeah, it won't. Don't panic. It's organic. Remember, I told you it won't fade color. Remember, that's why we could sell it to Michael Jackson. Well, our product needs OSHA, USDA, EPA, and PETA. You know, this is safe around dogs, unlike Michael Vick, and it's safe around kids, unlike Pee Wee Herman. High five. Oh yeah. The show alone worth me getting a commission off that one bottle?
Hell yeah.
Well, then that's why you should do it from your heart. You think I can do stand-up comedy?
Oh yeah.
That's the only reason why I'm doing it. This is a stepping stone for me, because I get a commission to pay for my acting school. That's why a lot of your neighbors
are. You from around here?
I'm from my mama. Don't tell my daddy he a faggot. But we stay out here now. Yeah, we stay in real.
What's your name?
Kenny Brooks. Why'd you go see me on TV? Make sure you take that Kenny Brooks.
Well, because I think if you're around, because we play music in bands, and we have it'd be perfect to have you come up and, you know, between bands and say some shit.
High five, Dad. Why y'all so nice, man? Y'all cooler than the other side of the pillow. Dang, if I had y'all hands, I'd cut mine off. Because your neighbor's been working me like I'm black and paying me like I'm Mexican. That's why I'm trying to get off work. I had one neighbor try to make me clean the toilet. I was like, dang. Y'all, but that's what I said. Just try one, because I know they ain't going to take the cheese out y'all macaroni. And, Mom, it ain't like y'all can't use it, though, because you use it on everything. Only thing you can't use it on is dirty man, dirty soul, and nosy neighbors. That's why we ain't called a Jesus in a bottle. And then, you know them bugs that commit suicide on the front of your car?
Yeah.
They tell me the bugs out here is bad in the morning, bro. Watch this right here, because see, it's unisex.
But it's made for... I have to leave, though.
Okay, well, just try one. You can do cash, check, or chicken wings, because you get this right now. You only have to wait on it. We faster than UPS and FedEx. Most your neighbor just been doing cash and making it out to the company. Could you get it right now? And I'm going to give y'all a spray bottle just because you ain't make me clean the toilet.
Okay.
God bless you.
right here. If you wouldn't have did what you would have did, then we wouldn't have been where we was at to get what we got.
Welcome to the Jim Baker Show. Coming to you from the village of Morningside.
Hello, everybody. Welcome.
Hi there.
Not to the final expo, but it could be the beginning of the final time on Earth of preparing.
Yes. Wow. That's good.
Jim, all these people out here,
eggs, whether eggs, they know it eggs, or not. $6 eggs could be coming soon to our grocery store.
Right. That's
Jim, all these people out here, whether they know it or not.
This has been one of my callings, is to get people prepared.
Yes. I love that.
I'm hoping to take a few minutes one day to talk about my vision.
Wow.
Really a dream, my two-week dream after I'd gotten out of prison. I saw, like the diseases, and I realized the diseases from the animals, and I saw this looked like a great grasshopper. And for 2 weeks, I was in a dream, and I would get up, and I'd go back to sleep, and the dream would start again. Have you ever had a dream like that?
Yes.
This was a two-week dream. I saw like a great grasshopper.
Right. Wow.
For 2 weeks. Listen to me.
Oh, boy.
Here he goes.
Oh, my goodness.
My God doesn't die.
Wow. It's true.
Read my part there.
Yes.
Sasha.
Yes. It says,
that's Mark.
Look, the Lord is coming with fire.
What?
The Lord is coming with fire.
What?
The Lord is coming with fire.
What?
The Lord is coming with fire.
What? In what?
The Lord is coming with fire.
What?
I've been doing a study on...
What?
This is not something we like to hear, but it's about a common denominator to a lot of these fires is...
I'm fine!
Yes.
The cow's dead. The chickens are running away. The children are... taking drugs, and I'm fine. And I'm fine.
Oh.
I'm just fine, just fine, just fine. I'm fine. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's serve some. The people are getting hungry.
Good.
I can tell. I can feel it in the room. Oh, geez. Listen to me.
Now listen to me.
Wow.
This is good food. This isn't junk.
It's the seasoning and it's the texture. It's the flavor.
Can y'all see this at all?
It smells so good.
It's so fulfilling. It's satisfying. It's so fulfilling.
Here, you want some soup, you hungry?
All right.
Now, this is beans and rice. This is two buckets. That is the potato soup.
Oh, that is so good.
Hey, Pop, we just made it. Dear God, it's good. If your Social Security check doesn't come, you can eat this. Get it now. Get it to your house. Look at the lumps and chunks. Look at those potatoes. Dear God, it's good. Look at here. Look at this. Oh. Hey. Oh, good. Oh, my God. This is your favorite soup. You want to take a bite of it? It's hot.
Well,
it's hot. It's really hot.
Oh, you're good. Yeah, get the napkins down.
Come on.
It gets a little messy with Jim
it's
Baker.
It's hot. So just sip it.
It gets a little messy.
And this one's still hot. Boy, it stays warm.
It is still hot.
Just hold it.
Mm. His food is it's
Listen,
seasoned and flavored.
It's
and
so good. Every food
fulfilling.
Is great. It's got nice flavor to it. Bye-bye.
We love you.
God loves you. He really does. Bye-bye for today. Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye for today.
Bye-bye. We love you.
Bye-bye.
That's chapter one. Would you like to have chapter two? You better, son of a bitch. I know the way.
I'm your huckleberry. there's no evidence that there's any relationship between intelligence and morality. I mean, God, let me tell you a story, man. One time I had this client. This woman was just ruined. She looked like a street person, you know, and she had very dirty clothes, and she was so shy that she couldn't even approach you. She had to shield her eyes from you as if you were emitting light, and she did that to everyone on the street, like she was bent over and humble, like a Chinese peasant brought before the emperor, you know. And one of the things I was doing with her in behavior therapy was trying to just get her to present herself in a more normal manner so that people wouldn't shy away from her and, you know, be instantly prejudiced towards her. And she'd come to the behavior therapy clinic. And she wasn't bright, this woman. I think she had only had like a seventh grade education. She was quite intellectually impaired. And she lived with her sick aunt who was schizophrenic and who had a satanically possessed alcoholic boyfriend that was always tormenting my client. She lived in absolute hell. But she had this dog, and she used to take it out and walk the dog all the time. And then she'd actually come to the behavior therapy clinic, partly because of her own problem, but she'd come to this place called the Douglas Hospital, and she'd been an inpatient in the Douglas Hospital. And in the Douglas Hospital, there were these long-term psychiatric clients, and they looked like something out of a Hieronymus Bosch painting or Dante's Inferno. I mean, these people were, this is way worse than One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. These people were seriously destroyed. And they couldn't be let back out on the streets during deinstitutionalization. Like, they were lifers. And she had decided that part of the reason she wanted to come to the hospital was because she had been institutionalized there. And she thought that maybe when she took her dog out for a walk, she could go and get one of those damn inmates and take them out for a walk too. Now, that was a person who was immoral. Dumb as a post, just screwed in 50 different directions. Nothing going for her. And she had the bloody moral capacity to decide that there was someone worse off than her. And believe me, that wasn't easy to find. And that maybe she could do them some good if the hospital would let her. Which they didn't, by the way. Yeah, well, that's the story of the soul. That's not the intellect, that's for sure. So.
Ned Brooks.
Scientists are continuing their discussions of the proposed U.S. program for putting a man on the moon at an estimated cost of somewhere between $20 and $40 billion. And here and there are voices of doubt that the project is worth the price. Yesterday we reported some reservations on the part of Dr. Ralph E. Lapp, the prominent nuclear physicist. Today, United Press International reports that Dr. Philip Abelson, director of the Geophysical Laboratory of the Carnegie Institution, and president of the Washington Academy of Sciences, holds similar views. Dr. Abelson, like Dr. Lapp, doubts that so much money should be spent putting a man on the moon when lunar exploration could be conducted at a fractional cost by electronic instruments. Scientists quite naturally can be expected to be much more eager for a moon probe than laymen because of their interest in any new field of knowledge. So when they start doubting the value of the program, we have only a taste of what is to come when congressional committees, which will have to vote the funds, start toting up the costs. When the congressmen are faced with the startling fact that the moon trip may cost more than it cost to build our entire railway system, and perhaps nearly half the value of all the nation's farmlands, they may begin to have some serious doubts as to where we are going and why.
Thank you.
minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And liftoff of NOAA's GOES-R, America's most advanced weather eye in the sky, elevating environmental intelligence to new heights and saving lives.
He has gone close to control. Booster has throttled down as scheduled. Response looks good. Roll program is complete. Roger, it's controlling down the middle.
Listening to the voice of Marty Malinowski.
Mach 1.
Standing by to pass Max through Q. Max Q. This is the maximum aerodynamic pressure area. When mechanical stress on the rocket reaches its peak because of the rocket's velocity and resistance created by the atmosphere. NASA's Atlas V.
Booster has begun throttling back up.
And
response looks good.
GOES-R spacecraft continue into flight. The United Launch Alliance.
Coming up on SRB jettison, and we have the first pair and the second pair. Looks like a good separation.
A tight squeeze for a warm welcome. New additions to the International Space Station have just arrived. The multinational crew includes astronauts from Russia, France, and the USA.
SK of the European Space Agency now inside, being greeted by his new crewmates.
Among them is American astronaut Peggy Whitson, who is the oldest and most experienced woman to fly in space. At 56 years old, Whitson is a biochemist and NASA's former chief astronaut. She's making her third trip to the station, a $100 million research laboratory that flies about 250 miles above Earth. By the time she returns to Earth in 6 months, she will have accumulated more time in orbit than any other U.S. astronaut, surpassing the 534-day record set in September by astronaut Jeff Williams. The combined crew will be one of the last six-member teams to live on the station for a while. Russia plans to cut the number of cosmonauts serving on the station from 3 to 2, following delays in launching a new science laboratory. The multi-purpose laboratory module is now expected to launch in 2018. Thank you, everyone.
And there's this really other cool thing where if you were to, it's a single point of failure, right? Because it's the suit, and if the suit gets a hole in it, you know, you've got trouble. But even if the hole was a quarter inch size, there's enough oxygen flow in that system to be able to spill oxygen out of those tanks so fast that they'll fill that leak and keep anything from happening to you long enough for you to actually get all the way down to breathable atmosphere. I mean, it's an amazing suit.
What is the temp? What did it start off on sea level, and then what did it get to at its lowest?
So when you leave the ground, it's, you know, whatever it is on the ground. In this case, it was pretty cold early in the morning. So it was probably, I don't know, 45, you know, degrees Fahrenheit. And then it gets colder and colder as you go up. And the cool thing about the way the tropical ball is, it gets colder and colder, and then eventually it levels out, and eventually it even gets warmer. So the coldest that it got was probably about minus 110, maybe 115 degrees Fahrenheit. And we had designed a system to warm me, like, you know, huge numbers of heaters that would basically take a liquid, almost like a liquid cooling in a car, and wrap myself around it with warm water, which would cover everything except my feet and my hands. But my hands got kind of cold because that was just kind of a ski glove kind of heater. But we had way over-designed that system because we tested it on the ground at these really cold temperatures using liquid nitrogen. It turned out that as you get higher and higher, the temperature's really, really cold. But there's so few molecules up there that they actually don't conduct very much. So, you know, surprising to us, when I got up to about 80,000 feet, we actually just turned off the heaters.
From Antarctica, former NASA astronaut Buzz Aldrin, the second man to walk on the moon, is being evacuated to New Zealand after falling ill. The 86-year-old tweeting these photos showing him preparing to fly to the South Pole as a tourist. Aldrin has already been flown to a U.S. base on the Antarctic coast. From there, he'll be flown to a hospital in New Zealand. So far, no word on what Aldrin is suffering from.
Admiral Byrd, you've been to both the North Pole and the South Pole. Is there any unexplored land left on this Earth that might appeal to adventurous young Americans?
Yes, there is. And not up around the North Pole, because it's getting crowded up there now, because they find out it's really usable, not only to live in, but militarily. But strangely enough, there's left in the world today an area as big as the United States that's never been seen by a human being. And that's beyond the pole, on the other side of the South Pole, from Middle America. And I think it's quite astonishing that there should be an area as big as that unexplored.
That's a tremendous
challenge. So there's a lot of adventure left down at the bottom of the world.
as far as how does it affect your life, this will only affect your life if you are an explorer and an open-minded truth seeker. This information will be of no use to you if you are a homebody and a closed-minded, willfully ignorant person. The Flat Earth Movement is basically saying that there is more unexplored land beyond the South Pole, and the governments are prohibiting people from exploring past this restricted area. How do I know there is more land? Because in 1928, Admiral Byrd and the U.S. Navy did an expedition and discovered that land extended at least 5,000 miles beyond the original southern end. And after follow-up expeditions, they discovered that this land continued and had no endpoint in sight. Most likely, they didn't have enough resources or fuel to continue flying thousands of miles past the South Pole just to see if there is an endpoint. Be that as it may, overall, this was a frightening discovery that needed to be hidden. They couldn't have the masses learning about land beyond the ends of the earth. What happened next was 53 nations came together and signed the Antarctic Treaty, which stated no one can explore the South Pole without permission, and the region will be a scientific preserve used only for scientific and peaceful purposes. Which now brings me to why would they lie? They are lying because they have something to hide. Some people say they're hiding the Creator. I think possibly people exploring beyond the South Pole will discover the ends of the Earth, kind of like the movie The 13th Floor, The Truman Show, or Dark City. Possibly they're advanced civilizations beyond the South Pole, perhaps even ancient civilizations that we think went extinct, simply migrated to these lands beyond the Antarctic. So now that leaves us the last question, what do they have to gain? And the simple answer is, the complete control over the minds of the people and where they can travel. You can't just jump up and say, I'm going to the South Pole to this unexplored land that Admiral Byrd was talking about in 1928. You need permission to explore. Trespassing will get you arrested or killed. The governments of the world have decided, no more exploring, stay within your jurisdiction, ask no questions, and be a good little boy and girl. The Earth is a ball, just like we taught you in school and on the TV. Anyone that tells you that the Earth is flat is retarded. You know, Richard Nixon once said, the American people don't believe anything until they see it on the television. There's also a saying that there are three things that cannot be long hidden: the sun, the moon, and the truth. What I find interesting is that religious people like Christians have told me that they believe the Earth is a spinning ball. But in their holy book, it says, the Earth has foundations. It says, the Earth cannot be moved. It says, the Earth is a stationary circle. So Christians, I'm just wondering, do you guys believe in the Bible or NASA? Now here we have a 1,000-year-old map of the world which originated from a Japanese Buddhist temple. What I find interesting is not only does it resemble the Flat Earth map, but it has 33 continents outside of the Antarctic ice ring. Is it a coincidence that this looks similar to the 1781 map of the world? The 1892 Gleason standard map of the world, the azimuthal equidistant map, the logos for the UN, the IMO, the WMO, the WHO. Is it just me or is there anyone else seeing a pattern here? Well, at the end of the day, I'm not here to convince anyone when in 1988 NASA has admitted that the Earth is flat. So now let's talk about why they said the Earth is flat. There's a couple bullet points I want to discuss. The first being, NASA has proof. Illusions and fantasies. Impossible on a globe. The Bible says. And lastly, my final thoughts. I think the best place to start when talking about the Flat Earth is NASA. We need to put NASA's credibility under the microscope. We need to first analyze and destroy NASA as an authority figure and as a reputable source of information or rebuttals. NASA, with the help of Hollywood and secret societies, are the puppeteers behind this grand illusion of the blue marble. NASA has become the frontman and the serpent of deception for the masses. I think of five acronyms when I hear of NASA. Never a satellite around, never admit strange anomalies,
nincompoops always selling alibis, not always scientifically accurate, and never a straight answer. What if I told you that NASA has slipped up and admitted to not only the Earth being flat, but that they've never been to the moon? Let's first look at this clip of NASA admitting they have never been to the moon.
Spacecraft that's going to take humans to explore the solar system. It's the next big step for NASA.
Called the Orion Multipurpose Crew Vehicle, or MPCV, this next-generation spacecraft will enable America to explore beyond low Earth orbit. This next-generation spacecraft will enable America to explore beyond low Earth orbit.
We get further away from Earth, we'll pass through the Van Allen belts, an area of dangerous radiation. But Orion has protection. Shielding will be put to the test as the vehicle cuts through the waves of radiation. Sensors aboard will record radiation levels for scientists to study. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space. We must solve these challenges before we send people through this region of space.
The plan that NASA has is to build a rocket called SLS, which is a heavy lift rocket. It's something that is much bigger than what we have today, and it will be able to launch the Orion capsule with humans on board, as well as landers or other components to destinations beyond Earth orbit. Right now, we only can fly in Earth orbit. That's the farthest that we can go. And this new system that we're building is going to allow us to go beyond and hopefully take humans into the solar system to explore. So the moon, Mars, asteroids, there's a lot of destinations that we could go to, and we're building these building block components in order to allow us to do that eventually. And hopefully take humans into the solar system to explore. So the moon, Mars, asteroids, there's a lot of destinations that we could go to.
Unlike the previous program, we are setting a course with specific and achievable milestones. Early in the next decade, a set of crewed flights will test and prove the systems required for exploration beyond low Earth orbit. Early in the next decade, a set of crewed flights will test and prove the systems required for exploration beyond low Earth orbit.
Well, surprise, surprise. No moon landings.
From Mars have ever been brought back to Earth, and no human has ever touched anything on Mars. But that's about to change. National Geographic has asked me and Jake and Kevin to talk about Mars because they have a show coming out soon all about how we are planning to turn Mars into a home, a place where humans will soon be living and working. It's a plan set to become a reality in the 2030s. That's cool, but beyond just how, there are everyday life questions raised. We would be literally beginning society all over again on a new planet. Whose laws will Martian colonists follow? What kind of watches, clocks, and calendars will they use? And what will be lost if we as a species gain Mars? Is it okay to touch Mars? What will its flag look like? In 1998, Pascal Lee designed a flag for Mars that was flown at the Hutton Mars Project Research Station, where how humans might live and work on other planets was studied. The flag is a nod to Kim Stanley Robinson's famous Red Mars, Green Mars, and Blue Mars trilogy. Should we have the technological and political ability to do so at some point in the future, we could terraform Mars from a red planet into a green with life and then blue, watery, Earth-like one. This flag has since been used by a number of Mars exploration societies and was even flown into space aboard Space Shuttle Discovery by astronaut John M. Grunsfeld in 1999. That all makes it a pretty good contender to be the first official flag of Mars. The Outer Space Treaty, of course, prohibits national appropriation of celestial bodies, but it doesn't necessarily stop private individuals or companies from doing so. But since it takes months at best to actually go between Earth and Mars and minutes to even communicate at light speed, how would and who would enforce laws on Mars? If Martian colonists did things that we here on Earth disagreed with, what could we do to pressure them otherwise or punish them for being criminals? One idea, extraterrestrial liberty, is to just give up control and release those headed to Mars from all current Earth-based laws their nationalities hold them to allow them to become Mars citizens, able to make laws, elect, live, and die the way they want, free from any currently existing state. That might be reasonable, but it raises another question. When is Mars now? What time is it there? For colonists on Mars, an Earthwatch would be of very little help. A day on Mars, the time it takes the planet to turn around once, sunrise to sunrise, is about 2.7% longer than on Earth. I mean, that's pretty close, but over time it adds up. Gradually, an Earthwatch on Mars would drift, and the time it said would tell you very little about night and day on the red planet. To combat this, scientists on Earth who work with robotic rovers on Mars use Mars time. They actually live by it. You can download a program that tells you solar times on Mars, or do what many scientists have done. Get yourself a watch that runs 2.7% slower than usual. If every second, every minute is 2.7% slower than it should be, it'll be perfect for matching Mars's rotation. That could spell trouble for Martian colonists, though, who wish to tune into live events on Earth, like sports or award shows. But again, given the immense travel time between the two, Earthlings and Martians may find that having similar timekeeping systems just isn't really that necessary in their everyday lives. Okay, right now on Earth, it is 2016. As we know, one trip through all the seasons from now will have been a year. But in that same time, Mars will have only traveled part of the way through its seasons. If Martian colonists continue to use Earth years, that's okay, but it would mean that for them, years would feel a bit arbitrary. They wouldn't contain environmental cycles like ours do. Perhaps if they feel disconnected and emancipated from Earth calendars, they'll just use their own Martian year system as well. A few such calendars have been proposed, some divided into familiar week and month lengths, but with about twice as many of each per year. The thing, however, that fascinates me most about putting humans, living things, on Mars is a more touching topic. Literally, humans will likely touch the red planet in our lifetimes, and the first to do so will be famous. But joke's on them? I mean, we, me, you, we're all already touching Mars. Let me ask you this. Where did you get that body? That one you're in right now? It's made of atoms and molecules, but they come and go. You eat and breathe and absorb things, use them for a while, but eventually shed or exhale or otherwise pass them through. A month from now, your skin will be completely different skin, all new cells. The red blood cells you've got now will only be with you for about another 4 months. Like a water wave, you're a temporary arrangement of stuff. A really neat thing that dirt does. But not all of this dirt that you are, the dust in from dust to dust, is earth dirt. New stuff is always falling to Earth, anywhere from 5,000 to 300,000 kilograms of space rock, dust, debris, asteroid fragments a day, some of which inevitably winds up being you, part of your body for a while. Now, that may sound like a lot of material, but compared to the mass of Earth, it's small. Some of these ET rocks are debris that's been floating around our solar system since the planets formed. Some has come from asteroid collisions. Some has even come from interstellar space beyond our solar system. What's neat is that because atoms and molecules are so small, even the tiny amount of interstellar material landing here adds up to a lot at the atomic scale. Ask a physicist estimated that if only 0.01% of all the extraterrestrial material falling to Earth comes from beyond our solar system, and even if only 10% of that stuff is water, that would still mean that 50 billion with a B, of the water molecules in your body right now, as you watch this video, were in interstellar space fewer than 1,000 years ago. Some of the space material falling to Earth comes from planets like Mars. When powerful enough impacts occur on its surface, Martian material can reach escape velocity and begin an interplanetary journey. Rarely, but occasionally, this journey terminates on Earth. It's been estimated that Martian meteorites only fall to Earth about once every 50 years or so. That's a long time in human years, but in planet years, that's nothing. Your physical body right now likely contains billions of atoms that used to be on Mars and arrived here on Earth in the last 1,000 years. If you consider stuff from Mars that's been here on Earth for less than a millennium as being Martian, well, it's tenable to say that you are 0.00000000000000001% Martian. But before you get too excited, there's a difference between Martian debris that was roasted and exploded in our atmosphere centuries ago and actual still on Mars material. The difference might be small, or it might be big. When Apollo 11 astronauts returned from the moon, they didn't splash down and then run into the arms of family members. Instead, they were locked away in quarantine for 3 weeks, just in case the moon harbored any kind of previously unknown or unthinkable life form, an organism or virus that could have come back to Earth with them, one that Earth life had never encountered and thus never been naturally selected to resist. The threat of a moon bug pandemic wiping out life on Earth was just large enough that NASA took precautions. Though later, Buzz Aldrin admitted on Twitter that their quarantine facility wasn't perfectly sealed. Luckily, no moon germs escaped and infected all Earth life, probably because there weren't any to begin with. After Apollo 14, the moon quarantine requirement was lifted because it had become sufficiently clear that the moon was devoid of life. But Mars? Well, we still don't know exactly. We haven't found macroscopic life on Mars, but the possibility of tiny things hasn't yet been ruled out. And the incredible consequences contamination could have means it remains a serious concern. There's even an advocacy group of scientists from all over the world called the International Committee Against Mars Sample Return. But it's not just bat contamination that matters, the transfer of extraterrestrial organisms to Earth. There's also forward contamination, the transfer of Earth organisms to things in space. Any life that might currently exist on Mars could be incredibly vulnerable to things we here on Earth barely notice, but accidentally bring there. How sad would it be to one day find life on Mars, only to realize that it's all dead? Everything it had to teach us about itself, about Mars, about the solar system, about life, wiped out just a few years ago by a virus stowed away unbeknownst to us on one of our robotic missions. Extremophile organisms have been found that may be able to survive such a trip. Life here on Earth may have even arrived from space in that way, a concept called panspermia. So should we be scared of monsters beyond our atmosphere? I'm reminded of the glowworm. In their larval stage, the glowworms stick to the tops of caves and leaves, usually above water sources. Their glow resembles the night sky, the tempting expanse of other worlds beyond our own. Like us, bugs are attracted to this vista, believing it's a way out of the cave. Of course, it's not. The glowworms dangle sticky mucus strings from their perches, snares that capture their prey. Are the real stars no different, a clever trap that keeps alien predators fed? Probably not. But that hasn't stopped space agencies like NASA from forming divisions like their Office for Planetary Protection, a group that oversees plans for missions that might bring Earth and alien life into contact. Currently, all missions to Mars must satisfy the Coleman-Sagan equation. This sterilization restriction works to ensure that the probability of us contaminating places like Mars with foreign earthly organisms is not zero, but at most 1 in 10,000. That was considered acceptable given the number of Mars missions we'd probably do before fully understanding its exobiology. So far, we have no evidence that anything is alive on Mars right now, or has ever been. But that brings us to ANSMET, the Antarctic Search for Meteorites, an effort that since 1976 has found more than 20,000 extraterrestrial rocks in Antarctica. The first one they found in Allen Hills in 1984 was special. For one thing, it's believed to have originated on Mars. It's estimated that about 17 million years ago, this piece of rock was blasted off the surface of Mars by a meteor and reached terminal velocity, about 5 kilometers per second, fast enough to leave Mars entirely. After flying through space for a very long time, 13,000 years ago, it got captured by Earth's gravity and fell to our planet's surface. 12 years after its discovery, the presence of what looked like microscopic fossils were discovered on the rock. Could they be evidence of Martian life? The claim didn't convince everyone, but to this day, the structure's exact origins haven't been explained. How exactly to tell whether they're caused by living things isn't agreed on either, but the finding was a major event in the field of astrobiology and the public's understanding of it. The discovery was possibly so momentous that US President Bill Clinton gave remarks about it, saying,
"Today, Rock 84001 speaks to us across all those billions of years and millions of miles. It speaks of the possibility of life. If this discovery is confirmed, it will surely be one of the most stunning insights into our universe that science has ever uncovered."
After his statement, these are the two questions he was asked by the press. Did he believe abortion rights were under attack? And where did he get his tie? The thing is, alien nanobacteria don't wear ties. They don't legislate or govern us or control our lives or look anything like us. If they exist, we'll most likely be in control of them and probably actually not even notice them under our boots. So does protecting or preserving them not matter? I mean, should we just not let them get in the way of our progress as a species? Well, that's a fundamental question that touches upon what we want our purpose to be in this universe. Labeling parts of Mars "don't touch" as parks would be a great way to preserve it as it was before we came, so that our grandchildren and their children can see what Mars was like for, well, most of human history. Others have argued that we shouldn't go at all, that Mars is best left to itself. Humans ruin things, and what right do we have to alter Mars if we can help ourselves? Still, others say, why stop at natural parks? If we find viable life on Mars, it may be struggling to survive. A rare relic, perhaps from a time when Mars was more hospitable to life. They argue that we should help change Mars so that those remaining Martian organisms can thrive and multiply and be their best selves. With our technology, intelligence, and sapience, we perhaps alone in the solar system have the power to help them, and we should help ourselves to Mars second. These aren't just hypothetical, philosophical problems, by the way. With plans for manned missions to Mars just a bit under 2 decades away, they're questions we will actually need to answer quite soon. Should humans go to Mars? It would be a great way to spread out, to diversify our habitats so we're still around should anything happen to Earth. And of course, it does give us more space for more people. But for what? Ultimately, Jupiter doesn't care if there are 7 billion humans or 7 trillion. The volcanoes of Io will continue erupting whether or not we write any more poems about love. If humans were wiped out today, the fundamental forces of the universe wouldn't change, and distant galaxies would continue their journeys into the abyss, beyond the observable universe, just as they already are and always will. What good is life to the universe? Perhaps it has none. But we are possibly its greatest and only hope to find out. We may not treat life as well as we could, but whatever this darned life thing is, keeping it around might very well be up to us. We owe it at least that much.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Thank God for my reefer, man. This is good. Every time my reefer, man, I have some good weed. And when I come back that afternoon, he don't ever have none. I want to know what kind of motherfucking deal he been getting. He need to get more of this. It's too good.
Now, go find the others.com.
Is that not the greatest suicide ever? Yeah. That's the point I was making.